Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by you. We're seeking sponsors to support our mission to share the stories, passions, and personalities of the people shaping Boulder's unique tech scene. If you'd like to be part of this project and reach a growing and enthusiastic audience, shout at us via Twitter at Boulder Tech Cast or send me a note at joel@conduitmusic.co. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. I'm interested in gaining and sharing a better understanding of the human aspect behind the booming front-range startup scene, and I'm continuously surprised as I discover, with each conversation, the incredible range of ideas and initiatives taking place here. Our guest for episode number 23 is Kate Catlin, co-founder and CEO of Find My Flock, a tech dream job landing engine built especially for underrepresented technologists. Among many things, Kate and I discuss why so many women are leaving tech and how that directly inspired her to create her company, Boulder's place on the diversity spectrum, the importance of aligning financial incentives with mission, and why Kate would love for her company to go out of business. All of that and more as the Boulder Tech Podcast speaks with Find My Flock's Kate Catlin. The thread running through your career path from Venture for America, which you were a part of in Detroit, to Find My Flock, which you're working on now, is a commitment to diversity. Why?
Really interesting question. So I started out my early life in environmental activism all through high school, all through college. I was student of the year as a freshman. I was traveling abroad to lobby at the UN, not the model UN, the real UN. I was working very intently on environmental justice, and throughout this time was consistently supported and praised as a leader. And when I switched from that world into the tech world, where all of a sudden there were no other women involved and there were certainly no women in charge, all of a sudden my life experience changed pretty drastically. It did not take long for me in technology to just feel this very visceral difference in what it meant to be a woman in the room. And I very quickly became passionate about making sure that was not the case, because tech is changing our world so rapidly, and we need women, we need everybody to be at the table for that.
That brings up two questions for me. First of all, what led you from environmental activism to tech?
I had meant to combine the two. I joined Venture for America, which is sort of like Teach for America, but for startups. The whole idea is find really smart, ambitious young people, mostly college grads, and place them in cities like Detroit, like Baltimore, like New Orleans, areas that are not San Francisco. And we work in startups for 2 years, contributing to the economy of those cities, but also learning to be entrepreneurs ourselves. The best way to learn is hands-on. So in that experience, my goal had been, oh, later I'll go start an environmentally themed company myself, because I have seen the power of private industry. And then along the way, became passionate about some other issues instead.
So are you a coder or?
I hadn't been before. I majored in economics, which there's some light coding involved in that if you want there to be. But I wouldn't call myself a coder at that time. Venture for America was the first one who introduced us to free coding classes online. They wanted their people to have an understanding of that language and that world. And then the startup that they placed me in that I was working at was called Grand Circus. It's similar to what we have here in Boulder with Galvanize. It's a co-working space / coding bootcamp school. So tremendously empowering for a number of people in Detroit, Michigan. And I was working there as a community manager. That had been my placement. Started taking some coding classes for free, realized, hey, I really like this and I'm pretty good at it. And that was where the transition happened.
And when did you start with Venture for America?
That would have been 2013.
And going back to the second part of my question, so since you've been in the tech world for 5 years, and what changes have you seen as far as women's roles and involvement in the tech world?
The change has been slow coming, I would say. I think the biggest change that's happened in the last 5 years has been that now we're allowed to talk about it. I think whereas before you could sort of talk about, you know, let's train some more women, but it had to all be positive. There could be nothing negative associated with it. And then all of a sudden, with the explosion of Me Too, and with the Susan Fowler coming out and writing about her experience at Uber, and with a number of other huge things that happened very publicly in the press, very suddenly we were allowed to talk about what it meant to be underrepresented in the industry. And a lot of companies have started to take it much more seriously.
Okay, so there is action backing some of that talk.
Well, it's funny. I think because this is only a conversation we've been allowed to have for, I don't know, 2-3 years, the solutions haven't been made clear yet. I think everyone is still experimenting because this is a huge systemic societal issue. There is not one silver bullet that is going to solve the problem of this. It's going to take a hodgepodge of many, many different solutions. And so I think all of the companies who care about it are at this point putting money into it, which is really fantastic. But we're all still sort of throwing spaghetti noodles at the wall to see what sticks.
With this environment as a background, you created Find My Flock.
Yes,
co-founded Find My Flock.
Correct.
And tell us what the Find My Flock mission and purpose is.
Yeah, so I'm a huge fan of design thinking. So I always like to start with the issue as best as we understand it. So at this point in time, maybe you've heard this statistic before, but 56% of women are leaving technology within 10 to 12 years of their career. You look surprised. Maybe you haven't heard that
one. I haven't heard the exact number, but I have heard about this issue.
Yeah, it's astounding. Like over half. That's crazy. That is crazy. And so to me, I think there's a number of wonderful organizations, especially nonprofits, as, you know, places like Galvanize and Grand Circus as well, that are bringing more women into tech. But that doesn't necessarily matter if they're all going to leave in 2-3 years. And so I'm hyper focused at this point on what is retention. Like, how do we retain women in technology? And 80% of the women who leave tech are still working full time. This myth that they are leaving to have babies is just that, a myth. They are all still working. They're just not in tech anymore. And so why is that happening? The number one reason that they say they leave is hostile work environment. I don't feel welcome. It's too aggressive. It's not right for me here. I don't feel involved, included, promoted, supported in any way. And so there is about an infinity of things that could go into just that. The solution that we are very focused on is, okay, while all these companies are working to create a more inclusive environment, we're just going to funnel all of the developers and all of the other technologists that we can into the companies that are already getting it right. So let's go find the most inclusive, badass companies we can and just bias the industry in their direction by helping everybody get into those companies. And that's really where Find My Flock has its solution. And so we've got a bit of a hybrid approach at this point. We have a job board online that any company can go post jobs to. So, you know, Amazon has job postings with us. Digital Globe has job postings with us. Tinder has job postings with us. And that's wonderful. We're so happy to have their support. We also have a premium level of service, which is our vetted companies. And those are companies that we literally vet. So we go in and we ask them for names of people on their teams, like 5 names. We call 2 of them. And we get the inside scoop on what it's really like to actually work on the team. How do you feel day to day? Has anyone been promoted recently? Have you noticed who is getting promoted? Do you feel like you might get promoted? Do you feel supported? Tell me a story about that. Tell me more about that story. We're really trying to deep dive on how it actually feels to be in that company day to day. And if they pass our vetting process based on a number of factors, including what benefits are offered, what they're pursuing in terms of diversity and inclusion, and also these in-depth screening interviews with developers, then we take them on as a vetted company. And that means we're much more hands-on with funneling our candidates towards those jobs, with supporting them along the way. We do some interview coaching. We do a lot of emotional support. We do almost like career coaching in a way. Like, are you sure this is what you want in your next step? Because our goal, our mission is to get especially underrepresented developers into a place where they're gonna feel like this is their dream job and they're gonna stay in tech. And so it needs to be a win for that developer and it needs to be a win for the company.
When was the company founded?
January 2017.
And how many vetted companies do you have?
I think at this point we have about 15. There are on our website over 300 roles total.
are there companies that wanted to be vetted and you went through the process and said, yeah, no?
There have been. Yeah. And I'm super anti-shaming. I'm not going to call any of those companies out, but we have to stick to our mission, even if it means losing on money.
Right.
So we've turned some away.
Your mission is to help underrepresented technologists find their dream job in tech.
Yeah.
Is underrepresented technologists define that? Is that just women or more that's, beyond that?
That's been a huge shift for us recently. So let's talk about that a little bit. So I got into this work because I was angry about my experience as a woman. It was a very like, this is a problem I see because it's my problem. And so I want to help other women like me find something better. The more you get involved in this world of diversity and inclusion and equity, the more you realize that these issues are not just for women. There's a huge amount of these issues that also affect people of color, that also affect people with invisible forms of underrepresentation, like if they're LGBTQ or if they have other forms of like underrepresentation that way. And so at this point, we're trying to focus more broadly on what that means. We can't serve everyone at the same time. So we're shifting first and foremost from just women to women and people of color, and then LGBTQ will come after that. But of course, we'd also love to serve veterans, and we'd love to serve other forms of underrepresentation too.
This is sort of a devil's advocate kind of question. And we also, you've alluded to some of this already, but what sets Find My Flock apart from traditional job search engines in the wake of, you know, Uber's well-documented transgressions, the buzz about how important it is to break up Silicon Valley's bro culture and atmosphere and Me Too? Aren't most tech companies figuring out on their own that they need to pay more attention to diversity?
Ooh, there was like two questions in there. Is your question, what sets Find My Flock apart from other traditional recruiting agencies?
That's one, yes.
Okay. And then the other one is, aren't companies doing this on their own?
Right. That's sort of the devil's advocate part.
Okay, cool. So what sets us apart from other job platforms? I think first and foremost is that we actually give a shit. Like, this is a mission-based organization. This is not hired.com. This is not Vettery. Like, we're not out to just make millions of dollars using developers, right? Like, this is so mission-based. It's so pro-developer. And so ingrained in that is that we're making sure that we're feeling those feelings all along the way, and we're feeling them with you, so that especially if, well, really only if you apply to our vetted roles. But if you apply to our vetted roles, we're here. Like, we're with you and we're on your team. And it's because of our mission. That's why we're doing it. Number two is that you can, this is a big thing, especially for women, because we have so much issues with imposter syndrome. You enter in your skills and experience up front, and then we show you jobs that you are qualified for that you may not even realize that you're qualified for. Like, I have talked to so many women on the phone who are like, oh, I have 10 years of experience. Do you think I'm qualified for this associate level role? And I'm like, girl, you're qualified for the director role. Apply for that one instead. And so we're trying to show you what you could apply for and take the choice off the table for you a little bit, so your imposter syndrome can't get in the way. Number two, you can filter by benefits. So when you're looking at our whole list of jobs, whether they're vetted or not, and it matters to you that there's trans-inclusive healthcare there, you can filter by that. If it matters to you that there's maternity leave there, you can filter by that. If it matters to you that you're within 60 minutes of a mountain, I added that one, you can filter by that. And the idea here is there are just questions that you cannot ask in a first interview without introducing subconscious bias into yourself. And so if you need to have those questions answered, great. We're going to get them out of the way up front for you. So it's right there. Like, you can very quickly get to the jobs you want. And I think those are the big three. Like, one, it's the hands-on, it's the mission and the feelings and the support. Number two, it's that we're showing you the jobs you may not know you're qualified for. And then number three, it's just the filtering to get to the ones you want.
And what's the success rate so far?
In terms of
matching people with jobs. Through the vetted system.
Oh, through the vetted system. Well, yeah, I actually don't have data on how many folks get hired overall through the job board, because we just don't have, we haven't closed the loop on that yet. On the vetted roles specifically, we've placed about 15 developers so far.
Do you foresee a time when Find My Flock might be obsolete because diversity hiring is so commonplace?
I sure hope so.
And then what would you do?
I'll go start an environmental company. Circle back to 2013. I would love for my company to go out of business.
That's an interesting statement to make. I get it. And I hear that.
I don't think it'll happen anytime soon.
Very few people. You're the first person I've interviewed that said that. And meant it anyway. Where would you place the Boulder tech community on the diversity continuum?
Interesting question. So I moved here from Detroit, Michigan. Bit of a culture shock coming from Detroit to Boulder. Those are the opposite ends of the American spectrum in terms of economic prosperity. And so it was hard for me to be here at first in that regard. One thing I noticed in Detroit was I've always been, you know, blatantly ambitious. So at one point I asked the CEO of a company I was working for, hey, do you know any women CEOs that I can just chat with and buy coffee and I'll just get to know them and emulate all of their things? And he said, Kate, I'm sorry, but I don't. And I was like, but you're part of a CEO's luncheon club, aren't you? Like, this is like some nonprofit you go to once a month. And he was like, yeah, there's no women in the club. And I was astounded. And I moved from this situation in Detroit to Boulder. And one of the first events that I went to was the Women Who Startup Rally in downtown Denver. And Krista Morgan was talking, and Lee, what is her name? The CEO of Havenly. She's freaking incredible. And like, they had so many powerful women on stage delivering such powerful statements that it just felt so much more supportive of women entrepreneurs here in Colorado. And I really, really appreciated that. It was a good world to step into. I will say, I think it's pretty obvious that Boulder is not great on racial diversity. This is a town where there is a large community of a Hispanic population, a Latino population, but they are not necessarily visible in downtown Boulder, and especially not in the tech scene. And Boulder knows that. I think we have a lot of liberals here who are hopefully very aware of that fact. But that's something that we can and should do better on.
So do you think that the fact that there are more women involved in tech here than there are in Detroit is driven by economics? Or is it just that Boulder is historically a more liberal town and maybe we're just that far ahead because we're quote unquote enlightened or whatever, certainly not enlightened, but maybe a step towards it?
Right. That's a really good question. It could be either of those things. One other factor I think is like the presence of mountains. I have noticed that in mountain towns, there are just more women in charge of things. I have no data on this. This is completely anecdotal. But I think if you grow up trail running up a mountain, it just leaves you with a different mindset. And so, I grew up in a Seattle area running up mountains and playing in the backyard and throwing sticks at my brothers. And like, that was an environment where I could very much participate at all times. And it was like more of, I don't know. I just wonder if that has an influence on things as well, like a more equality factor there.
That's an interesting way to look at it. So you're from Washington originally. How did you decide to make the move from Detroit to Boulder?
The weather. Detroit is incredible. It's an incredible town. The history there is so powerful. The diversity there is so powerful. The culture there is just amazing. And the weather is terrible. I'm not making any like secret statements here. And so after about 2 years in Detroit, I said to my company, hey, I really love you guys, but I am so unhappy in this winter. And they were kind enough to say I could go remote. So I wanted to get back someplace with mountains. And I also wanted to make sure that there was sun year round. And where do you get that? Really just Colorado. Mm-hmm. So that's how I ended up here. I did mean to move to Denver. You know, I considered myself more of a city girl at that point, and Boulder wasn't diverse enough for me. And then I must be the only person who can make this statement, but I found really cheap rent in Boulder. It was like a friend of a friend had an extra room kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of came here and got stuck. But I've come to love Boulder so much. There's just nowhere else in the world that you can go on a trail run at lunchtime and just, it's right there. It's 2 blocks from your office.
Do you have any connection to the Denver tech scene?
Here and there. I try and participate with Women Who Startup events as often as possible. And it's so close that I don't feel the Boulder-Denver separation the way that I've heard others do. I just view us all as one Front Range community.
Yeah, I agree on that. I've lived here a long time, and there was a time when it was like, oh my God, the divide between Boulder and Denver was like, how do you even get from one place to another? There's no way to do it. And now...
There would be no way of knowing.
Cross
a mountain.
Yeah. And especially, I think, coming from the Denver side, it was just like, you don't want to go up to Boulder.
Bunch of hippies.
Exactly.
Drinking their kombucha.
Yeah, now it's a bunch of hipsters drinking their kombucha.
So true. I think it's so funny, though. Obviously, you know, I am critical of diversity in Boulder. I very much am. However, I am also very aware of how supported I've been here. Like, the people that have supported Find My Flock, like, I don't know that Find My Flock would be successful anywhere but Boulder, because we've had so many introductions made for us, because mentors from the community, from Techstars, from huge companies like SendGrid come to Galvanize and give free feedback, like thousands of dollars worth of free feedback for some Jane Schmo like me who has a startup, you know, like, does that happen in other towns? I would like to think it does, but I think Boulder is so focused on that community support aspect.
And this is a common thread through all of the interviews I've done for this podcast, you know, and I wonder, why is that?
Mm.
Because it seems that it is rather unique to Boulder. A lot of people said, if I were in New York or Palo Alto,
yeah,
I would have to get through five layers just to get an email through to this person. Whereas here, I can just tweet at them or shoot them an email and we're having coffee the next day.
Yeah.
And it's a CEO. You know, some people say it's the outdoors, it's the environment, back to the mountains again.
Yeah, like maybe an awareness, because the mountains are so close, that life is like, you are small. No matter who you are, you're just another person.
Yeah. Or maybe it's sort of the next iteration of Boulder's hippie culture. This is my personal theory.
Like peace and love as applied to startups.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Boulder's been, a lot of people, especially people who aren't from here, think of Boulder as, you know, oh, that hippie town on the edge of the Rockies. And I've lived here a long time, and I've been saying for a long time that the thing that people think of when they think of Boulder, that hasn't been Boulder for a long time.
Huh.
But now in having these conversations, and every single person that I've spoken to talks about the openness, the accessibility, the friendliness, the generosity, the give first attitude. And I just think, I don't know, maybe that's just sort of in the DNA of Boulder. And
yeah,
that's sort of how it's manifesting itself now, is through this more collaborative atmosphere as opposed to competitive.
Oh, I could totally see that. Where did Give First start? Was that a Techstars thing? Was that a Brad Feld thing?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. I wonder if it's their fault. Like, I wonder, but it's chicken eggy, right? Like, did they come up with Give First because they were in Boulder? Or is Boulder Give First because of them? Or some combination of the two?
I couldn't even conjecture on that, but it's possible somebody moved to Boulder in tech. And hit it big, so they were able to, in a position to give back, and felt that DNA or whatever it is, that Bouldery vibe that made them think like, yeah, I need to open up a little bit and don't need to lock down. I mean, it's no fun to be locked down and at the top of the tower, but, you know, inaccessible, and you can't get to me. I'm all the way up here because I've made it and you haven't made it yet. I think it's cool that people up in that position want to raise others up.
100%. I agree with that 100%. And I think, you know, another way that it comes out is collaboration between organizations. I've been hearing all of this, like, dirt about other diversity organizations and how they compete and, like, the nasty things they quip at each other. I have never experienced that in Colorado. Like, I'm friends with all the other women who are doing diversity and tech stuff. And I think that's important. Like, we collaborate, we pass clients to each other. I'm doing this thing, they're doing a different thing. Why wouldn't we work together? Like, I wouldn't want to be in this industry if it was competitive and weird and, like, awkward like that. Like, I love the collaborative aspect of the Front Range.
It certainly makes it a lot easier to just put yourself out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, shifting gears a little bit. You had a blog for a couple of years in which you posted advice from people responding to your question.
I can't believe you found that.
What? It's right there on your website.
Oh, geez.
You posted advice from people responding to your question, what would you tell your 25-year-old self? It's rather impressive with over 100 posts featuring people from a lot of different walks of life. What inspired you to do this, and what did you learn from it?
It's funny. I'm like a little embarrassed by it, you know, because it got so cheesy in what I concluded. But it also was a hugely transformative thing that I did that I am so glad that I did. So what inspired this? I was turning 25. I was in Detroit. I had just gotten, like a big breakup in your early 20s is the biggest deal in the world. And I wasn't sure where I was going in life. Like everything just felt very lost. I felt very lost, as one does in your 20s, especially your early 20s. So I started to, I've always been someone who's been a little bit scared of death. Like I, you know, just growing up, like this whole idea of like, oh my God, one day I'm just not going to be alive anymore. It's just very compelling to me. And so I wanted to make sure that I was doing my 20s right. So I started, I think I asked the first one sort of just accidentally. Like I was just chitty chatting with somebody and I was like, I don't know, I'm feeling kind of lost. What do you wish you'd known at my age? And then I asked another person. And then I asked another person. And every person I asked had such an interesting answer and had so much more wisdom about the world than 24-year-old Kate Catlin. And it just snowballed. So I started writing about it. I sent around a survey to some people that they took. Most of the time it was in-person interviews, asking people from all walks of life, from an Uber driver in Detroit to a multimillionaire here in Boulder. And it just, there were a lot of themes that came out of it that I think were really interesting and really compelling to me. But the number one thing that people seemed to say was it's okay to not know the answer to that question. Nobody knows anything. That's the secret to adulthood. No one knows anything. And that is what helps you conquer every ounce of imposter syndrome in the world. All of the imposter syndrome I've faced as a founder, I always look back to that blog and remind myself, oh, it's fine because no one knows anything. And you can learn as much practical advice as you can. But at the end of the day, we're all just figuring it out as we go along. And it's okay if you screw up as long as you're iterative on your own life and your business and whatever it else is that you're working on. And that conclusion led to a lot of self-forgiveness on my part, as well as just the ability to push myself and challenge myself in other new, terrifying ways.
You're fortunate to have learned that lesson at such a young age because it's taken me a long time to learn, you know, don't beat yourself up. The only thing I know is that I don't know anything.
Right.
And everyone is pretty much making it up to some extent. That's not to diminish anyone's skills and the work they put in and the education they get and all of that. But it's all kind of up for grabs and it's up to you to create something the way it feels right for you to create it. And so to learn that at such a young age, I'm almost kind of envious in a way.
So what would you tell your 25-year-old self other than what we just talked about?
Well, I would say first and foremost, when things aren't going right or when I'm not feeling good about things, to stop beating myself up. Mm. That's really important. And to just be comfortable in the not knowing.
Yeah.
And try to just keep moving forward.
Just roll with it.
Just all you can do is take the next step. You're not going to knock it out of the park with every move you make. Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't. Often that's sheer luck when it does happen. But to just remember to breathe and that it's all going to be okay. And there's also a part of that that's a little privileged.
Yeah.
To be able to say that, because there are plenty of people who are living in the streets who,
like, it might not be okay.
It might not be okay.
Yeah.
And so that's where compassion and empathy come into play, and just wanting to help and not closing oneself off to people because of their situation or what you might perceive about them, which also kind of relates back to what Find My Flock is doing. Mm-hmm. It was really funny to read. You know, I skimmed through a lot of those posts, and it was neat to see. Yeah, you talk to the multimillionaire, and you talk to the Uber driver, and you talk to the woman who was like a meth head when she was 15 that you met on a Greyhound bus. And I'm like, who even takes Greyhound? People still take Greyhound buses. but there was a lot of things in there that I was just like, yeah, that's exactly right. Just don't put so much pressure on yourself. Mm-hmm. But also know that this is it, as far as we know.
As far as we know.
And to make the most of that as well. And to remember to close your eyes and stare up at the sun and just feel the heat on your face, or to literally stop and smell the roses, or hug that tree, or, you know, hug your friend or your mom or whatever. I mean, those little things are important, and it's really the mundane stuff that makes life what it is.
Those are the moments of life passing you by.
Exactly.
That's so true. And I think, speaking of the woman on the bus, I think a big other theme that came out of it for me was this focus on people, like the focus on belonging and finding your community and finding your, just, I think belonging is a really important factor of it, that, you know, for someone who's very driven in their early 20s, who is like, I have all these goals and ambitions and I'm going to start a company. It was a big, and there's nothing wrong with that. Those are all very good things to have. But I think it hit home very hard for me that you can't accomplish none of those things without your people, And that was said over and over again in different ways, from the guy who found his AA group to the woman on the bus who found religion. Just to people who found family and found friends along the way. And I think like that stuff has come to me to be more important than anything you accomplish in the business world.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Or there's times when I've found myself in a situation where it's like I found what I've been looking for without knowing I've been looking for it. And just the strength that can give you. To be like, okay, I'm safe here. I'm around my people. They've got me. I've got them. And it's going to be okay. And now I can, so I got that foundation and now I can venture out a little bit. So are you planning to do something similar for your 30-year-old self?
I've thought about that. Like, should I write a reprise? Like, now that I'm 30, what would I conclude differently? But so far, there haven't been a whole lot of new conclusions. Like, it's just been a reinforcement of the same stuff. I mean, there's a few, you know, minor things along the way, like a few tactics, you might say, but they all go back to the same theme. So,
yeah, as someone who's well beyond 30, going back to those responses in your blog, yeah, those all pretty much hold true from here on out. So for your 30th birthday, I would just, you know, find an awesome beach or mountain somewhere.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Not think about it too much.
Maybe I would consider one that was like, what would you tell yourself day one of starting a startup?
Yeah.
I think that would be a good one. But I think there's a lot of great podcasts just like this that are exploring that topic already.
Yes, definitely. What's the greatest challenge that you face in your work?
Oh, interesting. I would say making sure that all of our financial incentives are lined up with the mission so that it's never a choice. Like, we make money by getting people jobs. And that is good because that is a goal that we can focus on that both accomplishes our social mission and accomplishes making us money. And if you're in a social entrepreneurship role, I think that's something you got to focus on from day one. Because if there's a constant trade-off, like if it's a constant question of like, oh, well, here's the right thing, but here's how we make money, like it's just going to be too hard. The cognitive dissonance there is, it's already hard enough to start a startup. Why would you add that on top of everything else? So I think really aligning the incentives so that we are always automatically making the right choice is really important.
That's really smart. And how does that work? I've always been curious about how job placement companies make their money. Is it a percentage of the salary, or how do you get paid?
Yeah, it kind of varies on the level. So on the normal job postings, they're just paying a month-to-month subscription, and then we don't do any other services for them. But we're glad that they're on our platform so that people can, again, use those filters and comparisons of like, oh, well, this company has trans-inclusive healthcare and this one doesn't. So that's good. On the premium level front, we have a couple of different options. So one of them is a flat fee that says, okay, for this amount of money, we're going to do an event with you or whatever it is and bring this many people in and make sure that like you have X experience. Or we do our recruitment method model, which is for every person you hire, we do a fee. And the point, if anyone's listening to this that is considering working with Find My Flock, I would like to point out that we can make very customized solutions with this. Because in the end, we want it to be a win for you. If it's not a win for you, then it's not going to be a win for our developers. And then the whole point of our mission is totally defeated. So we would very much like to make sure that if you're on the event side, if that's more speaking to your brand and you want to brand yourself more in the diversity in tech community, we can do that. If you already have a great brand and you just need help with that one-off role, we can also do that.
How many people work for Find My Flock now?
It's been a big change recently. So speaking of things you'd tell yourself from day one. So I launched Find My Flock just by myself. Again, mostly just because I was pissed off. This needs to change and I'm changing it right now.
Anger can be a great motivator sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And there was a couple other friends involved just as like, yeah, we'll help you out for a few months. And then they both took new jobs and did other things. So that was very nice of them. But it was really mostly just me for the first year and a half. And then when we switched from a peer services model to having this tech platform, which was very recent, that was when the big change happened. We brought on a CTO, recently a COO. She's amazing. And then now we have two contractors as well, one on the recruitment side and one on the development side. So at this point, we suddenly went from a team of one to a team of five. And my advice to other founders is never start a company alone. I, from day one, wish I had had my co-founders by my side. It would have just been so much easier. We would be so much further ahead by now. Because when it's just one person doing everything, you effectively do nothing. Like, it's just too hard to get everything done. Mm-hmm. It's so much better to differentiate out and make sure that you have different perspectives involved in the conversation, and also that you don't have to own everything.
What do you do to take care of yourself, to rejuvenate, so that you have the energy to come back on Monday?
Yeah, I think a big lesson for me is learning not to own everything. This is something that I and probably other founders struggle with as well. Like, you know, taking 100% responsibility, but also letting other people own this thing over here. So in terms of like mental health day to day, learning how to do that is very important. And I think in terms of outside of work, I'm extremely active. So I'm usually mountain biking or trail running or road biking on any given day of the week. I'm training up to an Ironman next June. I'm super excited about that. And that is really where I find my zen. Never got into the yoga thing. It's too slow. I like everything to be high energy. But if I can use my high energy to get to a place where my brain is slow, then that for me is really helpful.
Anything else you'd like to add about anything?
I don't know. Should we talk more about the meaning of life or like, no, I think just in general, you know, if you're listening to this podcast and you are looking for a new job, no matter who you are, underrepresented or otherwise, we would love to have you join our platform. And we are hoping to create the most inclusive and joyful job searching experience out there. It is a process, as we've talked about. We're not getting everything right now. But our hope is that we'll keep iterating and get closer and closer to that.
Well, it's certainly a worthy goal.
Thank you.
Kate Catlin, thank you very much. That was Kate Catlin, co-founder and CEO of Find My Flock. Learn more at findmyflock.com. Follow Kate on Twitter at Kate_Catlin. That's Kate with a K, Catlin with a C. The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for the Boulder Tech Podcast HQ and to KGNU Community Radio for studio usage. Our intro music is by Echo Deck. Hear more at echodeck.com. That's ECCODEK. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@conduitmusic.co. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.